mistakenly titled this sermon A Christmas Story. That refers to a particular Christmas movie, which I happen to really like. But we're not going to talk about Little Ralphie and the constant refrain of "You'll shoot your eye out." I'm sure there's a sermon in there somewhere, but we're not going to go there. I should have read A Christmas Carol this morning. And I've been thinking of that great novel of Charles Dickens, and yeah, there's a certain degree of debate of whether or not it was particularly influenced by Christian themes, even though the Christmas season of giving is in there. But it's really a great novel, and it's been modified a number of times with a number of books and a number of movies. And each time, the central point is there, and it's a timeless point at that. Really what it is to live with a heart that's alive, or a heart that's closed off to the rest of the world. The story, as you all know, is a story of Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge, a miserly, old, and ungenerous man who apparently wants to die with all of the money he possibly can. And he's visited by four ghosts, all who have the intention of showing him who he used to be, who he now presently is, and who he will likely become if he continues down the road in which he's going. The first of these visitations is from his former partner in business, Jacob Marley, who would have seen who Ebenezer Scrooge was day in and day out as he worked for him as a partner. And it's Jacob Marley that sets up the sequence of the next three visitations. The first is the Ghost of Christmas Past, which shows him a vision of his earlier days of innocence and joy in which he was participating in the lively nature of giving and receiving and actually having considerations on the needs of others. The second is the Ghost of Christmas Present, which shows him his present life, the present realities of his miserliness, his uncompassionate spirit, and he's even shown how his own living, how his own character affects not only the man who works for him, but also the family of the man who works for him, and the sorry prospects for his youngest boy, Tiny Tim. The third, the Ghost of Christmas Present, shows the logical outworkings of a life of greed and selfishness, a lonely death with really no one who cares, no one who even remembers him or shows up to his burial. It's a wasted life. And of course, the end of the story shows a dramatic conversion of sorts of Ebenezer Scrooge as a result of actually coming to grips with who he is and who he doesn't want to end up being. And he turns from his greed and selfishness to a life of benevolence and generosity and compassion. And it's just a great story, because there's no middle ground in a story like this. There's no kind of sitting on the fence in terms of what is right and what is wrong. Either one is heading towards a life in which they will become hardened to the needs of others in this world, in which they will, in that hardening, become so inwardly focused that they have no time to listen to anybody, and in fact are annoyed by everyone else. Or the life that is heading towards a life of giving, a life of generosity, a life of caring and compassion for people. And the question in the story is whether or not one can actually stop the train. Scrooge himself states the very thing in the book when he says this: "Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, which if persevered in, they must lead. But," he asks the ghost, "if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Please, say it is thus with what you show me." In other words, if I change the course I'm on, will the ends change for me? And in fact, exactly that's what happens. I've been going through a book again in preparation for our forthcoming mission trip to Zimbabwe. entitled A Hole in the Gospel by Richard Stearns. He is the president of World Vision International. And it's a book that discusses how the Christian church, often in the West, has tended towards an understanding of the gospel that is simply reduced to what we know, apart from any kind of action or sacrificial action on other people's behalf. And in many ways, the church has at times become like Scrooge. Plenty of resources with which to give, plenty of hands with which to serve, plenty of opportunities to be moved to act, and yet we use it on ourselves. And his book is a wake-up call to the rest of the world. And reading through this book recently, I thought that this Sunday I was going to do something a little different. That I'd like to shine a light on the ways in which, in my view, our congregation has not been like Scrooge over this past year. That there's a certain degree of pride for me as a pastor to see the heart of compassion and giving towards people in need over this past year. It's not intended to puff us up, but actually to do what Apostle Paul did when he wrote his second letter to the Corinthians, which is to say that he's shining a light on the ways in which the gospel of Jesus Christ is beginning to take traction in the lives of those who bear his name. And the building up of the Christian faith and the proclamation of the gospel isn't always exposing us for where we fall short, but also encouraging us where we are doing well. Parents do this all the time, don't you, when you give your children an attaboy or attagirl? And you do that to encourage them for more action in that regard. Don't think the Lord's different. The Lord loves to give his attaboys and encouraging us in following his will. Over the past year, our congregation has been giving to people in need in ways that you might be surprised by. Our budget itself, we've given well over a tithe off of our giving to people in need. Our annual budget gives around $10,000 to the work of mission in our presbytery for ethnic congregations, for mission outreach, for the children's sake, and the mission and the ministry of our partnering with Calvin Crest. In addition to that, this year we started a homegrown outreach to feed a hungry village in Zimbabwe in partnership with former members of our church who we love dearly. We started this project in March, is this correct? In March. To date, outside of our own just annual giving and our budget, we've raised over $11,000, 9 months, to purchase food packs for people in a village in Zimbabwe. And this does not include donations to a forthcoming mission trip. In less than a year, we donated over $1,500 to our denomination's One Great Hour of Sharing, which is an annual donation given to hunger programs and disaster assistance relief. Congregation has given over $1,000 and much more that I haven't been able to account for to CARE, our local food bank. And our church has also facilitated a monthly donation of food items, which has continued to grow week or month in and month out. And it's grown to such an extent that the other churches in the Ministerial Association have asked how we do it. They want to partner with us to help stop a shortfall that's coming from the food banks next year. So every month when we're giving something, there's going to be at least six other churches who are also donating a particular food item to help people who are hungry. Our congregation gives very generously to our deacons, who give to local mission projects, who give to congregational members who are in need. And we, this last year, organized three separate trips to Salvation Army in downtown Modesto to feed over 125 people on three separate occasions. Our deacons just facilitated the giving of gifts to a number of local families, notably this year's Christmas Fun Drive, which helped 27 children and 19 adults. And the gifts from the tree, which were two each, were purchased in less than a week. Members of our church have partnered with other members of our community to donate to the Ministerial Association's annual Christmas fund. Christmas fund that disperses vouchers to needy families given to us through the schools. And this year we dispersed over $17,000 in food vouchers to our community. This is the most that we've dispersed since I've been here. And this year of all years. Does this make any sense to you? And all of these examples don't even include the variety of other ways in which a heart of compassion and generosity has been shown. When I hear stories of members visiting other members in the hospitals or in their homes, or hear them gathering together for dinner and praying over each other in their times of need, in their difficult circumstances, when I hear stories of people helping their neighbors, and I just can't help but think, this is precisely what the Lord has been calling us to do, that we are called to be a blessing to others. And this is why it brought me to 2 Corinthians 8. That Paul is boasting here about a church who wasn't big, wasn't rolling in the dough, didn't have a great degree of influence in comparison to other churches, was not in the biggest of towns in Macedonia. And yet, in the midst of their difficulties, their overflowing joy and extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. Going beyond expectations, he says, because they gave themselves first of all to the Lord, and then they gave themselves by the will of God also to us. Think of that. Church, you haven't been giving themselves first of all to the Lord, they now gave themselves to others who were in need. Now, this may or may not have been the legacy of our church for however many years we've been in existence, 97 or whatnot, but I think that I'm amazed by 2009, that the grace of God has poured out on this church to do what we can to help people who are in need. And my prayer is that it continues. That we have plenty of more room, obviously, to grow, but we should celebrate the fact that our hearts are moved to those who are in need. And I want to thank you for whatever you gave, your time, your prayers, your visitations, your listening ear, donations, your gifts, your food vouchers. Because it was first of all to the Lord, and secondly to others. And it may it never be said of us that we had a hole in our gospel. That it never said that we put our faith in the one who came to earth at Christmas Day to give all that he had for us, and yet we just take. May it never be said that we were Christian stooges or Scrooges. Stooges are just as bad. May we rather say together, like Tiny Tim, God bless us all, everyone.